Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now. Now, we've got a rather shocking story now about a woman who went from being a teacher with a first-class degree to losing her power of speech. She says she was then drugged and locked up in solitary confinement and eventually became suicidal, all because she was diagnosed with autism. She's here to tell us her story. Welcome to the show, Alexis Quinn.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So, can we start from the beginning? You say, even though you weren't diagnosed with autism as a child, you always knew you were different.
Yeah, I mean, I think most my story, you know, really since I've been born is about, you know, how we manage difference as a society. And I learned very early on, like many girls with autism do, you know, to kind of blend in. So like at school, you know, I would watch other people and kind of copy their behaviour. And I always strive to succeed. You know, I was a kid that was always driven to do really well. And so my parents kind of channeled that into swimming. The degree where I competed for Great Britain a number of times, and also into my academics. So in sport and academia, which we value, you know, really much, you know, as significantly as a society, you know, I was by all means doing very well.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And you say as well, as a child, you could often hear what people were saying in another room. So you could hear, other people would just hear a murmur, but you could actually hear what they were saying.
Yeah, I mean, with people with autism, we've got, you know, very often heightened sensory sensitivity. So, you know, when I go into a shopping centre, you know, the lights, I experience them as more bright, the sounds more intense. So I can pick up on different sensory sort of experiences. You know, some people, you know, like to be hugged tightly with autism. You know, people like myself, kind of shy away from touch. So everyone with autism is different, and fortunately for me, you know, my experiences were mostly to do with sounds and visual patterns that I could see that other people perhaps couldn't.
So you weren't diagnosed as a child. When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed when I was actually in the mental health system. So just briefly for your audience, you know, my brother died. I had given birth 9 months previously to my daughter. I was actually teaching overseas, so I moved back to the UK. So for somebody with autism, that was a lot of change. And I just descended into chaos, you know, and I needed help.
Yeah.
And what essentially happened was that, you know, as we're taught to, you know, you kind of ask for help and you kind of reach out. But because my experiences of, you know, normal life eventually, you know, death is something that we're likely all to experience, I wasn't managing it in the normal way, you know, and that was seen as odd. I go into quite a lot of detail in my book, Unbroken, about, you know, how I did manage that and how it was perceived as illness, really. And of course, autism isn't an illness. So I went into the mental health system and I couldn't get out, and it took 2 years of a chance experience in a unit with a specialist autism psychiatrist who happened to see me in a meltdown to recognise it. And then it takes quite a few months to get diagnosed. So, and I was an inpatient as well. So it was quite a rigorous diagnostic process. And that was 2 years after I became an inpatient.
And what makes me so cross, Alexis, is we're not talking like the 80s or 90s. We're talking about something like eight or nine years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the doctor took a year and a half before he even admitted, your GP. They should have known better, shouldn't they?
Well, I mean, at the moment, it was actually back in, 2012, 2014, when the government pledged to have, the 4,000 or 5,000 autistic people who were wrongly being housed in these institutions to get them out and back into the community. And I'm not talking about people that need to be in hospital. I'm talking about people who are autistic and who have been identified that could live in the community. And, the Mail on Sunday has done a great job, each weekend for the past 8 weeks. My article was published on the 3rd of November of raising this issue. And finally, it's actually due to the media getting some attention. But for anybody in a mental health hospital, to be denied your liberty, your rights taken away from you, having committed no crime. I'm not a criminal. I'm a teacher. I haven't done anything wrong. And just because of difference and the way that that's kind of interpreted, and because there is no community service, there are still 2,500 autistic people detained in hospitals that are recognised that could live in the community.
So you say that they, as you've just mentioned, they took away everything. They took away your mobile phone, which was your only way of communication. They took away your clothes. They wouldn't even let you go outside for some fresh air. So you felt a bit like a prisoner, I would imagine.
Well, in many ways, it was worse than a prisoner because, in prison, I'm led to believe, I have never been in prison, but that you get at least an hour a day outside. They can't force you because you're considered to have capacity to take medication against your will. Whereas I was often forcibly held down and injected with powerful antipsychotics. Now, I'm not psychotic. To sedate me, so that I could be kept in a small space. And I think I want to make the point as well that if any mental health nurses or, people who work in the system are listening to this, I'm not saying that all mental health services, are bad and that people go to work to do a bad job. What I'm saying is that my experience and the experience of thousands of other autistic people, is not what we can call good service, in this modern day and age. And I just simply don't think it's good enough to say, most staff are well-meaning, because it's kind of fatalistic. Like, we've got to do something about this as a society. And the way that we perceive difference, and we manage that difference.
It sounds awful. It sounds inhumane. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Do you think that they, in inverted commas, drugged you for your own safety? Held you down and gave you medication for your own safety?
Yes, absolutely. I 100% think that's what happened, and that's what they were trying to do. Because I couldn't be managed in the community with the current community provision. Now, my care must have cost about $2.5 million. What I needed when my brother died was some psychotherapy, someone to talk through what was happening to me, someone to talk through the weird sensory experiences that I was experiencing. But I'm afraid that if you go to the doctor, you will not get psychotherapy. You'll be on a year-long waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
You will not get to see a psychiatrist. You will not get to see a psychologist, because the system is just overloaded. And
yeah.
So what happens is that you descend further and further into crisis. And that's what happened to me. I was actually teaching at the time that my brother died. I wasn't somebody that needed to be locked up and drugged. Mm-hmm. I was somebody that needed understanding, needed support. And I needed it in the community. And what happened is that when I went into hospital, as somebody with autism, I reacted to the locked doors. I was like, how dare you take my liberty away? I mean, if I said to you, I'm sorry, your brother's died, you've got to go into hospital now, you might be a bit irritated about that,
Yeah.
You don't think that you need to be locked up. And then to be told that you have to take this medication because you want to leave, because you're irritated and you're aggravated and you're agitated. And it just spiraled out of control until I was the person that they thought that I was.
Yeah,
you know.
I can see how that would happen. Can I ask, were you sectioned? Were you sectioned under the Mental Health Act?
Oh, yes, I was sectioned for almost the whole 3.5 years. And the 2 weeks before I left the UK, I had just been detained for a further 12 months under the Mental Health Act. And they were going to send me to a medium secure psychiatric facility, which is, you know, where a lot of criminals go, sort of murderers or people with aggressive issues. And so I took the decision, and I knew that I had to leave. And I arranged my escape using a doctor, a GP friend of mine, and his wife, who is an ex-head teacher. And they came and picked me up, and they drove me to Dover. And I fled on P&O ferries and got myself to Charles de Gaulle Airport, then to Dubai, and then I landed in Lagos. So, and it was just 2 months later that I actually started teaching again. And what I needed was time to recover, you know, time for myself in an environment where there was no sensory stimulation, where I was put under no pressure, you know, where there literally was a beach, and I took my own child to the beach, and I just, you know, settled myself down. And I couldn't do that in Britain, unfortunately.
So are you still living in Lagos now?
Yes, I mean, I'm back for the holiday. So my daughter's with me. I work in education. I work for a big global giant. And she goes to school over there in an international school. And I've been teaching ever since. So I've been teaching the last 3 years.
I just find it crazy that you had to escape. It sounds like you, like, again, we're saying prison, you had to escape. Was what they were doing legal because you were sectioned under the Mental Health Act?
Yes, I mean, that's the funny thing, isn't it, is that, you know, everything that they did was legal and it was in my best interest. And I don't know if anyone's watched, I think it's 55 Steps, but she said, the reason I need help is because you're helping me, you know. What the interesting thing is that, yes, there are breaches of human rights happening here all the time. You know, my right to liberty, you know, my right to a private life, my right to be free from torture. Because for me, being locked in those institutions was torturous. I couldn't bear the sound, I couldn't bear the chaos, I couldn't bear the lack of routine. And what people with autism need is sameness, predictability, routine. They need to be in control. And obviously, psychiatric units just aren't those places, and no matter what staff try to do to help, it's not going to be okay, because we need to be in the community and we need to be, you know, treated in our own environment where we have control, and actually that's cheaper.
You know what, even I know that. I'm not a doctor, I don't know anybody personally with autism, but even I know that you need routine, and to lock you in a room with no stimulation is really not a good idea.
No, and I think, as I say, you know, if there are any mental health nurses listening or people that work in the care sector, I am not here saying that mental health staff don't try their best. I'm not here saying that, you know, they did these things on purpose. But I think most people know now, thanks to the excellent work, you know, of the National Autistic Society and other such organisations, that autistic people can't stand noise, they can't stand chaos. You know, they need to know what's happening. If there's even a small change to my timetable, you know, I need to take steps to manage that. And I mean, that's why teaching is so good for me, because it is so rigid and there are rules. And in hospital, there aren't those things. And if you think that my care was costing, you know, about £10,000 a week, that could almost employ somebody for a whole year to be, you know, working with me. Mm. Just me, you know. And actually, I don't need that level of support, but that could be shared amongst a number of people, and not only would autistic people have freedom and their right to exist with all of their uniqueness, it would also benefit the NHS because they'd be saving more money.
Yeah, sounds like logic to me. I read as well that you eventually demanded to be allowed to call a solicitor. How did that go down?
Well, the solicitors, I mean, that's my right. I have a right to legal representation, and you know, that was always facilitated. And my solicitor, who I mentioned in my book, you know, she always believed in me because she listened. You know, I think that staff these days, they don't have enough time to listen to their patients because they're so busy. But I think that the, you know, the fact that we are entitled to legal aid and a solicitor is imperative because, you know, she advocated for me. She knew what I needed, and oftentimes, you know, she could make that happen for me. So, you know, many thanks to her and her company.
Are you allowed, Alexis, to say where this was, where this is?
Well, I escaped through the port of Dover. So obviously it wasn't too far from there. So it was in the southeast of England.
Yeah, okay.
I had excellent treatment in York, which is where, in the retreat actually, which is a Quaker-run hospital. And they are the ones actually that realised that I was autistic. You know, I was not under section there actually. That was a period of time where I was off section. The doors were open and I made, you know, so much progress there. And it was just by chance, I mean, I'm so lucky, it was just by chance that she happened to be on duty that night and was called to help. And she pretty much told me the next day she'd like to do an assessment for autism. And 2 months later, you know, I was given that diagnosis.
Yeah. The irony of it all is that it's a unit dedicated to helping those with autism, and that's clearly not what they're doing. Do you know if things have changed since then?
Well, what I do know is that these people's stories are coming out in the Mail on Sunday, thanks to Ian Birrell. And, I mean, just this weekend, you know, we had the story of Jade, who went in at the age 14 for anxiety and eating issues, and is age 27, still in there, and she's autistic. Her main diagnosis is autism. So this is happening all across the UK, all of the time, and people are being made aware of it now. The public are being made aware of it. You know, Sky News did an excellent feature on it. So I'm hoping that these changes, you know, and like my book, you know, which is called Unbroken, I'm hoping that it will raise awareness just in the public. And it's just how we treat people, really, isn't it? You know, even just as a human race, how we manage difference and diversity.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Well, I think you're very brave, Alexis. I will just reiterate what you said. The book is called Unbroken, Learning to Live Beyond Diagnosis by Alexis Quinn, who we're talking to now, and you can buy it right now. You can even buy it from our website, tre.radio. You sound like you're, I mean, we're talking 4 years later, you sound like you're okay. Are you okay now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really happy and writing the book. I mean, I think it's a great story, you know, even for people that just want to read something, you know, really inspirational and interesting this Christmas. But I'm really working now, you know, not just in my care, I'm really working now to try and, you know, raise awareness of this and as well as my teaching job and loving my daughter. So.
Aww. Well, anytime you want to come on the show, you're very welcome. Just let us know, Alexis.
Thanks so much. Okay, now.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. Have a good Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.